Connor, you know on our podcast we love talking about theater, pop culture, love, and life in New York City.
That's tea. We try our best to capture the ins and outs of every moment of the cultural and current zeitgeist. But we don't always have time to include everything.
Exactly. So we're here today to tell all you drama listeners about this fabulous nonpartisan newsletter called The Collective. We've both been subscribers for a minute now, and let me tell you, it is absolutely worth it.
Yes, God. Every Friday morning, The Collective will send you a political recap of what the biggest national and world events of the week were. It also provides weekend talking points that'll have you ready for your socially distant picnics and family Zoom game nights. Are people still doing those anyway?
Okay. Head to thecollectivenewsletter.com or go to the link in the episode description and literally just sign up to get your weekly dose of news.
It's drama that you can't miss out on because it literally affects you and everyone. The Collective will have you covered.
All right, on to the show.
Press play, curtain up, and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. And we are in sync, and it is all is right in the world.
We're sitting in the same room. We are looking at each other.
Which is shocking.
I know. For reasons that we probably joked about on the quarantine diaries back in April and May, which feel like a distant dream.
They are a distant dream.
Do you remember how we did that?
No. And I'm so like, somebody is currently someone texted me that they're listening back on them for the first time, which, okay, why weren't you listening?
Better late than never, Connor.
I'm just kidding. I know people are busy and whatever, but I forget what I was going to say. It was probably about,
they were listening to some of the quarantine episodes.
Oh, and I was thinking to myself, how crazy that we did that and people still listened and then like still continued on to hear the rest of our interview episodes.
I'm going to say this on the record. Our podcast, we thought it was going to wane in listenership during the no guest episodes. It rather thrived.
I know. Like, we shouldn't probably just get rid of the guests forever.
No. It behooves me to say that we were inspired by these one-on-one conversations to do a Patreon, which is weekly bonus content, perhaps a couple times a month. And we promised it in the final quarantine diary, which was called Today I Had a Thought.
Oh, remember that? I was obsessed with saying that for like a week or two.
And I just want to say that has not gone away. We just did not feel like putting out a subscription service for like $5 a month was right, because we started recording Patreon episodes that are probably going to be lost to history now.
They are. That means there's at least 3 episodes lost to history. I think we actually talked about this in those Patreon episodes that we recorded.
Right.
But we recorded them. I mean, not to interrupt you. But we recorded them. And then George Floyd was murdered.
Right.
And the world changed.
Right.
And so we were like, yeah, we wanted to put out the Patreon, which was going to have like bonus episodes. It was going to have access to merch.
Maybe some special interviews with non-Broadway folk who, you know, like, well, I'll keep that a secret.
We'll keep it a secret because it is coming. But anyway, we just felt like, you know what? People shouldn't be spending their money on these 2 white kids, because I want to keep us young. People shouldn't be spending their money on us. They should be donating towards worthy causes that actually need the financial
which
support.
Is also why we decided not to launch merch, which I will say we've commissioned. Hunters get so mad at me when I say commissioned, but we have enlisted some friends who are going to design some merch, and we already have seen some of the initial looks of the first collection.
That's right. Volume 1.
Volume 1 of the merch.
What should we call it?
We'll find something silly. Yeah. And it's going to be great. And I think that as we head forward and we continue to see that we're not in quarantine as much as we were, but we're still kind of in this new, brave new world, that people can rock their drama merch, they can get their extra episodes, and everything will be good. And I've missed this.
I've missed it too. It feels like when today I had a thought, which I haven't thought about that quote in so long, but I feel like I'm having an epiphany as we're speaking where I'm like, this is what the podcast is.
It's what inspired us to start it in
it's
the first place.
It's what it should be. No shade or disregards any of our like Zoom episodes that we do, But I'm like afraid to laugh sometimes because I know it'll affect the sound quality of the Wi-Fi and stuff. And I feel like I sometimes hold back on saying something because I know it'll cut out the sound of someone else.
Right. Nothing can replace the in-person conversations, which we thankfully recorded, you know, almost 30 of those before. Maybe. I think I've completely overshot that number there.
No one knows.
We'll see. And then, you know, the Zoom conversations have been great. And there's been some of them that we've really have felt like we're in the room. Like
100%.
Like Catherine Gallagher and Jordan Luke Gage are the first two that come to mind.
Yeah.
And of course, our friend George Salazar and our new friends, Jenny and Kara. Like just so many great people who have really transcended the medium of podcast Zoom style, but I hope that we can get back to being in person soon. Even if I'm wearing a face shield and we're sitting on the opposite sides of a giant conference room table, like 50 Shades of Grey style.
Oh, okay, wait. Remember that scene when that's when she kind of starts to have power and she's wearing that. Like,
I think, but I dress. Like the Twilight series. Maggie, you're going to kill me for saying this. Like the Twilight series, I block out 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh my God. You know what? I think that 50 Shades is camp. And I will go on the record and say, I think Dakota Johnson understood that it was camp.
You know, speaking of Dakota Johnson.
I'm shaking because I knew it would come to this. But all I'll say is, I don't think those movies are good, but I have seen all of them. The 50 Shades ones.
Speaking of Ms. Dakota Johnson.
Girl.
When we say someone threw the first brick, we reference the uprising of Stonewall, in which Ms. Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera led the charge at Stonewall.
That's right. Yes, God.
We reference it now as sort of like a metaphor, some might say, for social change.
Yes.
And when Dakota Johnson sat opposite Ellen DeGeneres and she said, actually, Ellen, that's not true.
Oh, I'm shaking.
In regards to Ellen claiming she wasn't invited to Dakota's birthday party. When we all knew where Ellen was that weekend, cozying up next to former President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Or as our high school history teacher called him, Shrub Jr.
Yes.
Think about it for a second, then we'll move on. Speaking of shrubs, I have something to tell you later.
Okay. Weird.
Yeah.
She said to her, actually, Ellen, that's not true. And we knew in that moment that Ellen was disingenuous. We knew.
We knew.
You know what? Her empire's crumbling before our very eyes.
It's true.
I want to just say my heart goes out to everyone who was terrorized by Ellen, including her staff, who are falling on the sword for her now.
They are. And, you know, we're, of course, referencing the fact that Ellen DeGeneres and her TV show, The Ellen Show, is currently being investigated and exposed for
systems of abuse.
Systems of abuse, racism, horrible quality, like work in culture, environment, etc.
Right.
Just that it's a horrible place to work and that, you know, you can't look at Ellen in the eye when you're walking down the hallway, mm-hmm. or just the horribly racist things.
There are Twitter threads that outline the way people have been treated by Ellen and her producers because, you know, the snake rots at the head.
I think it's the fish.
The fish rots at the head.
It's like,
well, she's a snake. And I say that her producers are falling on the sword, but from what I've heard, some of the producers are monsters as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, down with that.
One of them's gone already.
Yes. And as we struggled with the Lea Michele of it all earlier this summer, I hate to see women torn down.
Especially a queer woman. Mm-hmm. The only openly gay, I mean, I think, at least the most popular openly gay talk show host, female talk show host.
I don't know her name, but there's that Late Late Show host. Who
is she by?
I believe she's queer.
Lily Singh?
Lily Singh.
I don't know. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah. Well, Ellen is daytime anyways.
She allegedly took jokes from Kat Cohen.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Ellen is daytime. I know. I hate to see it. And people are like, oh, James Corden's going to replace. And like,
oh, so James Corden will steal another role from a queer person?
Oh.
Like when he took the role of Barry from a gay man, Brooks Ashmanskas in The Prom. And now he's going to do it in the prom movie. Anyways.
I'm gagged.
I'm feeling wild right now.
I am too. But anyway, I want to see Ellen replaced with another gay woman. Who could it be?
Wanda Sykes? Bring Rosie back?
People on Twitter are like, make it Jujubee.
I know.
Drag Race.
You know, why don't we have someone who's a little bit younger, more modern? We see all these Instagram conversations happening.
We see
like different like roundtable style things like that. Bring someone else in. Bring a drag queen in. We saw how RuPaul's show went, and I think Ru's not the vibe we want for this.
No.
You know, Kelly Clarkson does a phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah, she's
Drew Barrymore
great.
Is going to be doing a talk show. but we want a gay person. I don't even need it to be a woman.
Make them a person of color too, because this is just stupid. I'm bored with Ellen. Let's move on.
I know. In my head, though, I'm brainstorming like who it could be. And there are endless options. And I think that there's got to be smart people out there who will swipe up the right person.
Did you see that Scooter Braun is like coming to Ellen's defense?
I've seen that. And that doesn't surprise me at all.
He's a disaster. What a snake.
And you know, the only song on Folklore that I don't care for fully is My Tears Ricochet.
My Tears Ricochet. Track five.
Which, you know... It's a diss track in many ways to Scooter Braun.
It is?
Did you not know that?
No.
And I just don't connect with it. Maybe I just haven't had that experience. I also don't connect with Epiphany.
I know. Is that rude to say?
Folklore is a work, is a masterpiece.
Taylor Swift's Folklore, her 8th studio album, which when we recorded our episode with Kara, it had been out for like 24 hours. And we were busy doing something. We were in the city. And I don't know that I had fully processed how... masterful and iconic and emotional and everything about it. Just, it's amazing. Taylor nailed it again.
She did. And it's, people are calling it her best album. They're saying all these things about it. It's breaking her records that she set. Here's the secret, listeners who might not love Taylor. She's been putting out great work for a decade plus.
Oh my God. I mean, listen to on her Fearless album, the song 15, and you will be taken back to when you were 15, literally like a freshman, feeling all these, you know, hormones and emotions and love and friendship. And you literally, I remember our mom was listening to it in the car with us once, and she was like, wow, I like that song. And we were like, what? That we were in high school at the time. And she was like, I remember being 15. Like, Taylor just can make you feel like you've experienced things that you haven't experienced. And I think that's what she's nailing about Folklore, is that there are some things that I have been either lucky or unlucky to not experience, but I still feel so emotional at the work she's putting out.
She just never disappoints, in my opinion. And I think there were precursors to this album. Like, for example, The Lucky One.
Oh, on Red.
On Red, which is this gorgeous song about perhaps Joni Mitchell. People thought perhaps it was actually Taylor predicting her own ultimate recoiling from the industry. Oh, Connor and I were so gagged.
Full body chills, FBCs.
It's just amazing.
Well, because she does something similar in The Last Great American Dynasty,
which is my favorite song on Folklore.
Okay, give me your favorites there.
Okay, so it's Last Great American Dynasty.
Okay. Okay.
The One.
So good.
August.
Yeah.
Betty. Invisible String.
That's a good top.
What about
five.
You?
Okay, number one is August, which of course is this incredible summer romance reflection. And you know what my favorite part about it is? Taylor, who nails the bridge every time, and I know everyone says that, and it's like going around the internet, she also nails the outro. Because, okay, in the bridge of August, she does this amazing, it's amazing. It's like, you know, meet me behind the mall, all these different things. And then she goes into an outro where she starts repeating some of the lyrics. There's even, and then the sound starts to kind of echo out, and it becomes fragments. And the song itself has, you know, like 20 to 30 seconds of music as it fades out. And I just can't help but think about how this song is a memory play. It's looking back on this time and it's fading out like a memory. So as she's telling us these lyrics, these words from this, you know, summer love that's lost, it's fading out and it becomes fragmented. It's just this wonderful, perfect story. The Glass Menagerie is shaking. I tried to think of the title of it a second ago,
that.
But I couldn't.
Knew you were gonna say
okay,
it.
Okay, so anyway, August, it's just beautiful. Lisa Combs told me, she texted me at like 12, you know, 20, the night Folklore came out. She goes, August, it's for you. Love it. Okay, so August number one, and then I have trouble with the next four, picking what goes where.
In no particular order.
No particular order. It's like Betty, Mirror Ball, The One, and Cardigan.
Cardigan is great. And it grew on me. I didn't think it
grew
was.
On me.
I was surprised that was the one she did the music video for when it all launched. But I do think it's really beautiful.
But I have another one that could sneak in there.
Okay.
Illicit Affair.
We've Been in the Knowing.
Oh,
You love that song.
I love that song. Yeah. Okay.
It's really fun.
It's so good. Okay, wait. We have like, we're running out of time here.
I know, because we do want to get to the wonderful interview that we had.
Yes, we have an amazing episode ahead.
Right. And so, but we, you know, we had a little extra time. So we wanted to talk about what matters most for us in these times.
There's so much going on. Do you want to talk about the Emmys for a second?
I do, because I touch upon it in my dose of drama, which... foreshadowing some I talk about some major snubs that are happening with the Emmys, which they are going to be online this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, why they aren't just going to quarantine every single person and put them in there is anybody's thought now, because everything's going into production. You know, Drag Race has allegedly started filming, and I know a lot of HBO shows have really contained their environments and are filming.
Wig.
I know.
Do you think that people nominated for Emmys this year will still dress up and do like red carpet type things?
I wonder if they're going to alert the winners in advance and have them record acceptance speeches.
Because I think that's how we know. They figured out quickly how to do these live events from home is to have the content be pre-recorded so that sound issues are figured out. There's no like awkward. Are you
there's
there?
No, there's no Raul Esparza Sondheim scenario.
Love him. Oh my God.
I know. So I think that that is probably what's going to happen. I think that they could probably give it a week and
yeah,
everyone sits on that secret who wins and everything. But
God, I just want to like see something, an exciting live event again. And I think the Emmys, I look forward to every year because I watch so much TV.
Well, I don't know why they don't just do it as the drive-in. You know, they're doing these drive-in drag shows. Only person who gets out is the person who gets out to accept their award. Everyone's wearing a mask. They step up into the podium and everything's, and you know, yeah, they give their speech and then they go back to their car with their Emmy.
So they could do that for the people that are in, hypothetically, LA or wherever they film it.
Right.
But I guess people who can't make it or can't drive, or I don't feel safe flying, but
no.
People who fly. Okay, interesting, interesting. But I just want to say I'm so gagged that Insecure got so many Emmy nominations.
I'm wearing my We Got Y'all shirt right
yes.
now.
Yeah. Issa just deserves the world.
Yeah, and it's overdue. I think she's going to win.
I hope so. I hope.
Catherine O'Hara.
I kind of want Schitt's Creek to win Best Comedy. Catherine O'Hara could... Okay, here's what I'll do. Catherine O'Hara can win because it's her last season of Schitt's Creek. Issa will win another season, but maybe Insecure wins best. I don't know. I'm having trouble.
I do think this was one of Insecure's best seasons.
Oh, it was so good. That episode, what was it, Low Key Happy?
Mm-hmm.
Where her and Lawrence have this just, it's almost mystical, timeless.
You know what it reminds
night?
Me of thinking about it? Euphoria.
Ugh.
Which exists in this strange sort of drug trip. I mean, the whole thing feels like you're in a weird kaleidoscope. And Zendaya was nominated.
Queen, she's great in that show.
She's amazing. I think that was like a surprise. People are saying that she stole Reese Witherspoon's nomination, but like,
no, I'll tell you, I would swap out. Okay, I haven't seen Laura Linney in, I think it's Ozark, but she's been nominated for Emmys before, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, she's very decorated.
She, and then I think Olivia Colman's good in The Crown. You know, Jodie Comer won for Killing Eve last year. Even though Reese has been nominated for this Emmy before, her performance in Little Fires Everywhere was unbelievable.
You take her Madeline McKenzie from Big Little Lies and you raise it 10. It is like truly transcendent.
Wait, and would that be limited series actress,
oh yeah,
though?
We're confusing our, we're having category fraud right now. But regardless, I think that
I'm getting it mixed up.
Reese's performance in Little Fires Everywhere is remarkable. I'm so glad Carrie got a nomination.
Me too.
I'm a little
sometimes her acting is a little
but we
broad
live for it. We live
I
for
know.
her deliveries.
And that girl that they had playing young Carrie Washington, she nailed the like big mouth, like the opening of her mouth, like
cause
the mannerisms.
Carrie chews every syllable of her deliveries.
She does.
It's remarkable.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, it's great. I am so gagged that Paul Mescal was nominated for Normal People.
Yes, he's just everything. I'm surprised.
Meet me behind the mall, Paul.
Oh. I'm surprised his co-star didn't get nominated, Daisy.
I am too, but I think there were so many performances for women this year.
So that would have also fallen into the limited series, right?
It would have, because Normal People is only a limited series. Yeah. I forget what else is nominated there.
What's kind of fun is a lot of these shows, like Little Fires Everywhere and Insecure and Normal People, Watchmen. These are all things that I think we collectively as a world have watched during quarantine.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've all been in this road together, and now we're all sort of reaping the benefits of who's going to be nominated and awarded in the end.
You're right. I love when the country like comes together for something fun.
Yeah. And
a concept.
And, you know, we're going to come together in November, but we need to register. Make sure you request your ballot early.
I did. Did you?
Yes.
Got
to
do it.
I know. It's time to vote him out.
Yes. And Biden. I just have to say this. I know it's August, but Biden wasn't my first choice either. And I'm going there. We need to vote for Biden.
Yes.
This is ridiculous. Trump literally wants to move the election because he knows he's going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just ridiculous. We need a president who is going to take care of the people and is going to help tackle this horrible pandemic that persists and is only going to get, I'm going to say it, it's going to get worse through the fall and winter.
Yeah.
So we got to vote.
We do. You know.
And vote early.
Early. Vote as early as you can. The thing is Biden is going to be a transitional president. He is not expect any interest in doing a full two-term scenario. He's going to have one term. He's going to start cleaning up the mess. And then we can get in some icon. Elizabeth Warren, for example, who in this house we stand.
Stacey Abrams just paving the way for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I know. That'll happen.
One day. It'll be very The Politician season two, where they're like, we're actually going to... Okay, this is a spoiler for the end of season two of The Politician.
We don't talk about The Politician.
Shut up. I can't. Where they're like, we're actually going to lower the age so you could be VP.
It's all cracked, and so has this entire recording.
I know, but I missed it.
It's been so fun, and if you've made it this far, I hope that you're excited for this interview that we have next. Larry Owens is amazing, and I mean, you read in the episode title, it's Larry Owens.
And you've heard his voice on the Strange Loop cast recording, and if you haven't, go listen to that first, and then listen to him talk about it. Oh my God, I hate when podcast hosts tell you what you're going to hear before the episode happens.
Yeah, we'll let you find out what we talk about. But in the meantime, we hope that everyone's out there staying safe and, you know, staying ready. Yes. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. All right, let's get going.
Let's bring in our guest.
Okay, our guest today recently received the Triple Crown of Off-Broadway Awards, winning the Obie, Lortel, and Drama Desk Awards as the star of the Pulitzer Prize-winning musical, A Strange Loop. In addition to his performance as Usher, he's appeared in Fat Camp, Grease, Gigantic, Dreamgirls, and more. He's been featured on the New York Times Best of Comedy list, Vulture's Comedians You Should Know, and Time Out New York's Comedians We're Obsessed With. As an inimitable breakout star of the comedy scene in New York City, our guest blends comedy and cabaret for sold-out crowds at the Bell House, Caroline's on Broadway, in the U.S., and in Canada. He's the host of the musical comedy podcast, What Makes You Sing. You'll recognize him from High Maintenance, Search Party, Helpsters, Dash and Lily, and in the upcoming film, Silent Retreat. Please welcome to drama, Larry Owens.
Hi. Oh, wow. That was awkward.
You're so accomplished, and especially recently.
Especially recently.
Thank you so much for doing this, Larry.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On drama, we love to talk about theater and pop culture and just a whole variety of things, but I think Con and I are both eager to talk to you, especially about A Strange Loop, which we saw in its extension last summer already. It's been over a year now, I think.
Yeah.
And you are just a supernova.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
It was seriously one of the best things I've seen in so long. And actually, I was thinking about this. I was remembering when we were there, and a celebrity was there too. And the whole time we were watching the show, I would like think, I wonder what, I could hear her laugh. It was Jane Krakowski. Do you remember when she came?
I didn't meet Jane when she came to the show, but one of my friends works with her, and so I heard that they spoke about the show, which is just like, what does that conversation sound like? I would love that.
So cool. Actually, you know what? She also made a terrific guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars.
Nothing better than literally having, like, I'm obsessed with the woman whose voice is gone. Like, I just, like, I think that it just it's like, I don't know, it's like something about the vulnerability, having to muscle through the texture, like something about it actually is empowering to me. And I thought that,
oh my God,
I thought that her sharing that with us, that croaky voice, was exceptional.
Iconic. But anyway, A Strange Loop was amazing. And I've been listening
about Jane Krakowski.
Wait, on Drag Race, I thought she gave phenomenal feedback, except I felt like they gaslit Blair a little bit. Not that I like wanted Blair to do well in the comedy challenge, but
I think that Jane deserves a permanent seat on the US, and I am directing all of my time and attention to Drag Race Canada, which is just, it has that let's put on a show vibe to it. The queens aren't like socially, like they aren't camera savvy. Like they're not, what's the word? They're not as like business driven as I feel like an American queen goes on the show. Like they don't know how many weeks they have. So they're like, let me get a catchphrase out. Let me get a Tinder slogan out before this is over. And I don't feel that with the Canadian girls. I feel the Canadian girls like so sweet and kind, but like have access to bitchiness. And I like it being at a different level, some might say a little bit lower than the American. Like, it's charming. Sure. I like the charm of Canada's Drag Race. How about that? It brought charm back to the franchise.
You nailed it. Absolutely. Who's your fave?
I love them all. I mean, Priyanka.
Yes.
An amazing word. Like, it's literally that lip sync. I loved it because
it's
just a great lesson for lip syncing. Kiara was doing great and she was energetic, and Priyanka also has tricks and energy and everything. But ultimately, like, Priyanka's quality of storytelling was just higher. It was just higher. And like in Priyanka's choices to be still and just like shoot energy out of herself. It made it a really funny image to have her like standing solid and then Kiara like splayed out on the floor.
I know. It reminded me of the Latrice and Kenya Michaels Natural Woman lip sync in season 4.
It's a similar lesson.
Yeah, similar lesson. I am a Rita Baga super fan. I think that she is so cool and so cracked. And that Edith Piaf, what?
The Edith Piaf was really great to do a grotesque on the show and just literally like to become more grotesque and unintelligible as it goes on. I thought that was really funny. And I just, Jimbo, I love so many of the girls. Jimbo's numbers were so good and so mean, like that I actually had to laugh. Like there's a moment where Bo had dropped a punchline and he literally just like, is you're a fat bitch, and it's like, I would take it under zero circumstances, but literally like while playing Joan Rivers, like that is the perfect choice. It is the right joke. And I
can't believe someone hadn't done Joan before. Like that seems obvious.
I think that when you hear you're going on Drag Race, like the snatch game is very, very difficult. I mean, we All Stars had a really good snatch game this year too.
It did. Yeah.
We've been blessed with these snatch games.
Definitely for all. For real. You know who would make a good Snatch Game character is Leslie Jordan.
Leslie Jordan. I'm sure we're going to see a Leslie Jordan. And especially now that Shay has won with a male character, which I think has done happen before, maybe with Kennedy as Little Richard.
Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can win in trousers, Bill Finn reference. So we'll see if we get a Leslie Jordan. Has there been a Leslie Jones? I feel like she's also be really fun.
Yeah, someone did Leslie Jones. Heidi did.
And failure. Which means they're like, you're still up for grabs.
And the Vivian in UK did Trump and won.
Love that.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, and Lemon was great as Jojo Siwa.
I love Lemon. I mean, Lemon's reads were so good. The reading challenge. I love it. I love this RuPaul's Drag Race Canada podcast I'm on.
I know. I know. This is
so comfy, though.
I know. We love. It's part of the world of drama. But did any RuPaul affiliated people come and see Estranged Loop?
I don't know. I don't think any queens would come to see it. But yeah.
Any other fun celebs, or were you always like, I don't want to know, I just want to get through the show? Because it was a mammoth performance that you had.
I think I realized during that show, or maybe it was because of what the role was, that like I didn't care to know. Mm-hmm. Then sometimes like you would literally just like see like there's a moment in the show where like sort of like the set does a thing and then it goes from being like stark to very specific. And so there's there's a lot of lighting. And so then the audience becomes lit. And so like, there's just like Jonathan Groff, like smiling through this hard play. And like, it's like a beautiful way I could tell that he was just like, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's Groff, or like Billy, like if they're sitting in the front rows, then it's like, yeah, it's a small, we love the intimacy of Off-Broadway, so you're like, yeah, that's Billy Porter, and like,
that's
Lynn. I feel like the composers I would always know, so I'd be like, there's Lynn, there's Jason Robert Brown. I remember seeing Jason Robert Brown also just like clocking their faces as well, like their expressions.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I didn't know about the Sondheim night, and I'm so happy because I don't know. I'm sure I would have like imploded and like sabotaged the performance in some way. Just to be like, great, so now he hasn't seen me do anything perfect. But like me not knowing, I actually went out there and I had a vocally good show.
Well, I know that Sondheim is like one of your ultimate, like Sondheim and Bill Finn are like your heroes.
I love Bill and Sondi. Actually, for quarantine, I can't. So I like outside of quarantine, I basically watch falsettos like or and a new brain the Jonathan Groff bootleg version, like I watch them like almost like every week or like on like a constant rotation, and they're just such my saving grace that I've made it so that I can't watch it during quarantine because I like it's just like it hasn't been that dark yet. I need to save it for like, I don't know, I feel like it's such an immediate joy and like mood booster. Mm-hmm. That I feel like it's almost too easy.
I totally get it. Wait, I was going to ask something about Estranged Loop because now that we have this beautiful cast recording of it, I was thinking about how the role of Usher is literally like, if you take Elphaba and like Evan Hansen, it's, you're in like every scene singing, like doing incredible vocal gymnastics at all times. I truly was like, how is there not an alternate for this role like twice a week? But I guess who else would play the part?
it definitely, I mean, part of like what attracted me to the role was that I loved, as an actor, I like to be used. Like as an actor, I feel like I like, you know, showing. And I don't know, just getting it. I feel like there's, like you said, there's so many roles where like other people get to display this, you know, musical theater performance skill that is so special. Like when you can, you know, like present it and share it and people recognize it, it's so special. And so I was excited to do something that did involve myself and that involved my body, that involved my body and my identities in a way that was really fully rendered and difficult. There is work for, you know, people of my type and everything. I just find it to be simple stories and single stories, and so Usher had a lot to sing about, and that was like cool. It was like, and everything was coming from such an authentic place. The writing, you know, this couldn't be better. So it made it. Yeah, I actually saw Wicked last fall. Like I literally just took myself to see Wicked, and then I was tracking. I was like, oh yeah, as a kid I was trying to make something like this, and then I was like, wait, she sings four numbers in the first act and then she does three in the second, like like a smoke break. like that track, like by what I just did, is not hard. Like Rose has huge swaths of text and she does huge swaths of singing, but like the ratio just, it's just, there's no Evita. Like none of the girls do what Usher does.
literally.
Which is wild. And just like to, thanks to Liz Kaplan, she of the amazing vocal techniques, and she really helped me to train the muscle of singing so that I could do it. And I'm like, I don't ride roller coasters. I don't like heights. I don't like fast moving things, but I will take a theatrical challenge. Like any day. Like if they're like, let's make it harder. I'm like, I love that. That to me is as thrilling as, you know, what people get out of like roller coasters and stuff.
You're amazing.
Yes, and clearly everyone else agreed because you were racking up the trophies all of this last couple of months for that part.
Yes, very bizarre to have like a beautiful outpouring of of like this, like, you know, like it exists. It's a part of the industry. It's a
right.
Part of, if you do good work, then like that sort of thing happens. And I feel really honestly like disconnected from it all. Just because like there were not, like, what I would have valued about the experience would have been like being at, you know, like a party of like all my peers and like getting to like freak out to Francis Jew and like, you know, get my selfie with Groff finally. Like I just like I'm so grateful for the recognition. I wish that, and just like honestly just like being with the cast and the company and, you know, our amazing team of producers and all the people who made the show such a wonder. Like you just like, you just don't get to like hug them and like take a big picture, which like, yeah. Before this felt really like, you know, it's just hugs and photos and proximity, but now it's like what I would give to just have those hugs and those photos and that proximity. It feels bizarre, but I'm super grateful like that. Yeah, I can't believe it. I definitely always knew that Michael was talented and that his writing, and that like I would do anything for his writing to receive the recognition. So like that, like all of that, like him winning the Pulitzer for writing, like absolutely like a premonition of mine, just because of like, that's nothing to do with me. Like that's his brain and his genius and like getting engaged. Getting it to the page, which is like so hard. And what's such truth?
Well, I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of it, or me, or you, or anything. So maybe one day down the line.
Maybe.
We'll see.
First Pulitzer Prize winning musical to say Truvada and Bussy, I think.
Yeah, definitely musical.
Definitely musical.
Definitely musical. Wait, so going back to the beginning, because we touched on Sondheim and Bill Finn, but we'd like to talk about the Ring of Keys moment on our podcast. And Connor's mad because I'm stealing this moment for him because he usually introduces this segment, but I felt moved. This is a first in drama history. But I'm wondering if you have a Ring of Keys moment when, you know, when you were a small Allison and a lesbian walked into a dinette for you, and that lesbian being theater. What was that moment for you?
I always just tell a different story, which is more fun than like telling the same story over again. But I feel like I just always responded to musical theater storytelling. Like I feel like as a kid or like a toddler, like even like as like a young person, you watch shows and then there's always like a moment of theatricality where like there's either like a school play or something, and they would show that school play for like 5 minutes at the end, you know, or something like, or just like a piece of it in a movie. But I was always so much more interested in that part of this, like in that, that is a concept, that part of the scene, than anything else. So I just like feel like, I just wanted to be a part of it. But then there were just so many amazing like TV movies like that represented me. Like watching Brandy as Cinderella, I was like, I actually, it feels weird now to have to like you know, like go back and like see how I fit into it all. Because as a kid, I was like, no, like that's the, she's the princess, the godmother. Like there's like, there are a bunch of roles actually, like the queen, like these mm-hmm. are, and these are great parts, you know? Like Audra McDonald's Grace in, you know, the Annie television movie was, I was like, yeah. I was like, no, like she is a great part. Like, it was like, yeah, like I'll just be in stuff. And like, originally it was white, but now it just won't be. And I like didn't realize it. So by those Rob Marshall, Maren and Zayn, yes. and like productions, like really like, it put me in the center of musical theater. And because they had like black stars in them, I felt like, I don't know, it felt like something that like included like my like household too. And so it was like less weird that I was into it, basically like less gay. Because I'm like, sure, Randy, sure. It's Moesha.
Because you grew up with all sisters, right?
Yes, okay, this research department is insane at this podcast.
Sorry, the producer's piping it into my ear as we speak. Actually, I'm
dying. To quote Truvada and Bussy, and no, my family history. Yes, I have five. So yeah, and I'm definitely an anomaly.
That's I totally hear you about the Brandy. And you know what's cool about that Cinderella is now a strange loop, and you in that role is going to be that for someone else. And some young gay black kid is going to see that. And it's really amazing. You might, it might make you blush to hear it now, but in the grand scheme of things.
I think it's really cool. And just like, honestly, just to have something that like, I hope that like these young kids like don't feel like Usher. Like I don't feel completely like Usher, but there are things that I identify. There are things that everyone identifies with. That's why the musical is a success. Like, it doesn't matter what your protagonist looks like. Like, the feelings are relatable. Like, the emotions are writ large. But I do hope that, like, a lot of the things that Usher has to go through, that, like, people don't have to. But then that becomes the acting challenge. It's like you get to play what it's like to, like, live in a society where you might be discarded or undervalued or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I hope that, like, it becomes, I hope that it becomes, like, an acting challenge for people who look like me, where they're like, oh, remember when that used to happen?
And, yeah, no.
And now, like, we have, you know, we have this starring role in a great musical, and that also, like, that it just provides a way for talent to, like, you can't break out if you can't break in, is something that I say. Mm. Like, how do we get more people who like look like me, like in all platforms? Like, they need an opportunity. Like musical theater, you pass down these roles. Like they become like the thing, you know, the thing that introduces that, like people get to aspire to, or like people like you're so and so, you know. And so just like leaving that so that when someone, you know, is ready and can do it, that they can rise to the occasion of this great role like Hamlet or something, and then honestly have a career and get paid money.
And I think it's only the beginning, because I feel like when theater really comes back in a live form, we're going to see so much more from you down the line as well.
Oh my gosh.
And I want especially some more from your comedy scene, which we've only seen you in guest capacities at other comedy shows at the Duplex and other venues, but you also were on all these lists and in demand.
Yes, I definitely did a bunch of comedy. But honestly, as like a backdoor way to, like, honestly, it's literally just musical theater. Like, it's...
Sure.
It's like, it's musical theater with comedy swag. Like, I wrote these, like, these songs that became my act, and just, like, there's an amazing alt queer scene. Julio Torres, Sydney Washington, Lorelai Ramirez, Bowen Yang, Matt Rock. Like, they're just, like, the kids are so good. They're all right.
The
kids are all right. And I, like, literally just, like, was invited to start to, like, perform with them and learn from them, and then like just bringing myself to it, and yeah, so then it opened up this like whole other way that like when I wasn't like strangely like hadn't premiered yet, but I was the artist who was always making it and always was like, I was kind of the same person. And so before I had that, like, you know, that sort of like New York City stamp. Like, look, it's a person now. Like, before I had that, comedy was an amazing way for me to just, like, literally do art. Like people pay $5. They, like, have a couple of beers. They, like, see their friends. Like, they stand up, like, in the back of a, mm-hmm. you know. Like, it's just so, to me, it was so beautifully, like, democratic. It was just, like, so accessible. But the talent and the thoughts, like, what people present in their stand-up acts is actually some of, like, the most, like, immediate, like, you don't get ideas that immediate on a Broadway stage because of how long it takes for it to get, like, it takes 6 years. So, like, the thought that you're watching a Broadway stage is 6 years old, and we send texts and tweets, and we just keep, we have a feed, we power. So it's like getting 400 people in a room to watch something that was created that day or worked out that week before, that's, like, not precious and not expensive, but still really well made, is what I got mm-hmm. from doing comedy.
Oh, it's thrilling.
Yeah, I got to sing. You know, but, like, and all that to say that, like, I literally, like, I just belt. I'm like, great, these are my good notes. And, like, and when I feel, when I'm not feeling it, I'm like, great, I'll do one comedy song. I have 8 minutes. Great, I'll do my 3 minute comedy song. I'll do 2 minutes of yelling jokes. I'm just yelling, just absolute presence fucking. And then I'll finish with being alive because I, like, feel like I might want to cry today. Decision that, like, oh yeah, I'm like, at any point I can just throw in a song for myself. And because comedy audiences, yes, they're judgmental in a way that, like, they're not judgmental, they want you to be good. If you're good, there's no comedy audience that will not laugh. But, like, obviously we know the opposite, but, like, a comedy audience is actually really, really patient. I've seen comedy audiences sit through, like, moments of, like, huge duration that would make Chekhov scream. Like, you know, like, literally, like, like I've seen comedians do, like, stretches of, like, silence and uncomfortability that are, like, beyond Pinterest-esque. And so in that same way that if the black fat comic, like, is just singing a ballad for 3 minutes, they're like, cool. In a way that
it's worth that entry.
Musical theater audience is like, what are you doing?
Literally. I know, right?
What are you doing? I can do that.
Right. Yes, so as we're reaching the end of the podcast here, we like to wrap up on a dose of drama, which is usually something that's on the top of your mind at the end of this conversation. It could be a piece of content that you've been consuming, a topic we discussed earlier. Maybe, you know, something dramatic that you're feeling passionate to speak to. And I have something that I'm thinking, that I've been thinking about all weekend. Well, Trump has announced that he wants to ban TikTok. Is it happening? Is it not? I have no idea. But I just need to know where all of the cute, shirtless young boys are going to disappear to when TikTok is gone. Because, I mean, honestly, nobody really knew where they came from when TikTok introduced us to them. And now I have no clue where they're going to go with their shenanigans when it's gone. I'm sad. I love TikTok.
Maybe Twitter?
Are the TikTok gays going to become Twitter gays?
Yeah, this is just, it's disappointing all around. TikTok is fun. Fun, but we definitely don't need, it just, like, when Vine died, people got, they were unhoused on the internet. And so time will tell. I hear that Microsoft is buying TikTok though.
Oh, tea.
All right. My dose of drama is that, and this is, we haven't had the chance to talk about Emmy nominations yet on the podcast, but it's that none of the women from Pose were nominated, which is just, we should just pack up and go home. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I honestly feel like I mean, it's transphobia at this point that they don't even recognize them as women in the categories. And I'm not going to name names because I don't like to be negative on the podcast, but there are people who were nominated this year that it's like, what? And for that, and you, if you watch any episode of MJ yeah. Rodriguez, who we worship every single week on this podcast, you will, and I mean, India Moore, everybody on that show, Angelica Ross for her phenomenal, I mean, just watch Pose instead of the Emmys this year because it is absolutely incredible.
I love that. Speak to it.
I hope they turn it out with something, like put in some cool reason for us to watch. Because if it's just like Zoom awards acceptances, it'll be sad.
I know. Maybe we have to just adjust to them. I don't know.
I know.
I just want everyone to stay safe. I feel like there's a lot of like production that's happening. just like... I feel like there's just a lot of production happening, and I just hope that everyone is staying safe. I feel like hair and makeup, I'm seeing a lot of people in hair and makeup, and that feels honestly like the least COVID safe thing ever. Hopefully there's a way to make an interesting program. Actually, BET Awards, they did a virtual ceremony. They should, whoever the producers are, the BET Awards, you should hire them because they made it good. They had Amanda Seals like in like a green screen, like doing basically like Larry Owens comedy.
Just, like, which we love, so.
And then they had these taped performances, again, the production, people were... People were definitely out and out, but I think that's where like we got the first like Chloe and Halle tennis court video.
Yes.
Or no, the VMAs. The first one with the yellow and the pink, that was so good. Just them laying on the blue water, the SpongeBob and Patrick. We love it.
Yes. They're killing it with their at home performances. For real. They're amazing.
I love them so much. I just want them to stay safe. Too much production.
I know. Larry, do you have a dose of drama?
A dose of drama. This goes to corporations out there. Pay your invoices on time, okay? It's like it's month 5 of the pandemic. We're all going through like... Don't ask for an invoice, honey, if you're just gonna send me a check whenever you want to. That's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. On my invoice, I put due date. I would like to be paid by this day. I also put direct deposit. No one's going to a bank, honey. So when you send me that check after asking me, and then the check's still not here, then the runaround, I've asked 6 times, what's your number so I can follow up? And then you never put your number in there, you're evading me, okay? And I don't think you want this class action suit as to why I might be receiving less than preferential treatment. So this is just a vague call in, not call us, it's a call in to people in charge of payroll. No more, someone said this word earlier, shenanigans.
Well, Larry Owens, you are an icon. We are so thankful for you to taking your time on drama.
And we leave on an absolutely like positive note. Like we absolutely just lasering down accounts payable. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Absolutely. Everybody follow Larry on Twitter and Instagram. It's Larry Owens Live.
And don't forget to follow us at The Drama Podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating and also check out everything Larry's got out there. All right, Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.